Next up will be Free IPA Global Catalog Challenges with Alexander Bokovoy and Florence Blanc-Renaud. I will stop sharing my screen. And Alexander, Florence, are you there?
Yes, so let me share my screen.
Perfect. Great.
Okay, hello everyone. Let me start by thanking the organizers for finding out a way to get through these challenges that we have. And this is the talk about our progress in combining uncombinable things. And I've been talking about the global catalog work in Free IPA several years ago. We stuck at that point and then decided to regroup and make it a bit differently. So this is the result of that regrouping. So Flo, could you please move forward? I'm working on and off Samba for quite a long time, and Samba team member since 2003, and I'm working for last decade or so on Free IPA.
Yes, so my name is Florence. I've been working on LDAP server technologies since 2007, and I joined Free IPA in 2016.
So before we start, I actually would like to thank you. A lot of people who helped us to get this working across multiple projects. So it's not only IPA, it's Samba side. There's a lot of other details that we needed to be implemented or fixed or tuned in 389DS, LDAP server, and then MIT Kerberos. And not only those. So thank you all and for allowing us to make this progress. Okay, so why there is a need for global catalog with IPA? Because IPA is what people often call Active Directory for Linux. So why do you need to have this on Linux if your Linux machines do not really need the global catalog? Well, the simplest answer is to allow access to Active Directory resources for users and Kerberos services defined in IPA, but that's only part of the story. Okay, so we keep calling this Frankenstein Active Directory. It's like Active Directory, but for Linux, not for Windows clients. So IPA is using a lot of different technologies, combining them together. And one of the differences with Samba AD, for example, is that it still uses Samba NT domain controller code base to implement what Active Directory domain controller sees as a separate Active Directory forest. And the forest separation allows us to actually don't care about a lot of hard to implement details that Samba AD spent a lot of time to implement, like replication protocol and stuff like there is no need to have compatibility with Active Directory LDAP schema and particular directory information tree setup and so on. And this all didn't matter until we started to implement the global catalog, because global catalog users are actually Windows machines. So they need to actually have access and to the services that they expect, and also the services have to provide what they expect. You cannot change clients. You have to bend to those clients. So what we did is a fine-tuned way of bending to those clients' needs within the constraints or the decision made in IPA to represent all these things. So now I'm switching to Flow for going over the LDAP and not LDAP details.
Okay, thank you, Alexander. So we had a need to implement the global catalog, and the global catalog is a LDAP server. So at the beginning, you could think that this would be a simple task, but as I will explain later, a LDAP server is not just a LDAP server. It's not that simple. Because LDAP is a communication protocol that was designed with a lot of flexibility and extensibility in mind. So for instance, you can define your own schema with your own syntaxes, your own attribute types, your own object classes. You can even define specific matching rules to explain how to compare the values or to sort the values. So that's for the data that is stored inside the LDAP server. A second point is the way you organize the data in the directory server. So you can have a completely different structure. It can be almost flat with all the user entries in the same container, or you could design a structure with a lot of different organizational units. For instance, one for your sales organization, one for your engineering organization. So this flexibility means that you cannot know in advance how LDAP server would be organized. Additional difficulties are also linked to LDAP protocol because it's designed to allow extended operations. So the standard operations are add, search, modify, or delete, but you could also define your own operations. And finally, within your LDAP server, even for the simple operations such as a search or modify, you can define extended controls that will slightly modify the way the operation behaves. So all of these difficulties are also linked to the schema that we are using. So in the global catalog, a global catalog is a specific instance of Active Directory server. So it has a subset of the Active Directory schema. And for instance, if we take the simple CN attribute, you can see that the OID that is used to define this attribute is not exactly the same one as we are used to seeing in a standard POSIX LDAP schema. It's the same thing for the syntax. It's a different one. So it's an example of the typical issues that we will see when we try to mimic Active Directory global catalog in our own LDAP server. Other examples of schema inconsistencies are attributes that are defined as single-valued inside Active Directory, but multi-valued inside the traditional POSIX schema, or object classes that do not contain exactly the same set of attributes in Active Directory schema or in traditional POSIX schema. So the global catalog has also specific attributes that it relies on. So for instance, the object grid, object seed, etc. And it means that if we want to implement our own global catalog, we need to have a method to populate the values for all those attributes. In this slide, I will quickly show the main differences in the hierarchy that is used in the Active Directory global catalog and in our own directory server in FreeIPA. So you can see that the global catalog is quite flat because all the users and the group entries are defined below the same container, CN equal users. And this container is directly below the DSE of the global catalog. In FreeIPA, we have a different organization. For instance, the users are in a separate container. The groups are in a different container. And the users and group containers are stored below an intermediate level, the CN equal accounts container. Another difference that we can notice is that the users in global catalog have a naming format using CN equal the username, whereas in FreeIPA, we are using UID as naming format. The last big difference is the global catalog behavior. It's really specific to Active Directory. So Active Directory is able to have a special handling for some search filters. So for instance, a search filter using the object category attribute will be manipulated and handled differently. It's the same thing for a search filter using the object seed. The object seed is an octet string attribute, but it's possible to use a search filter that is using its string representation instead of the object string. And another example of special behavior is the use of extensible matching rules. So for instance, it's possible to make a search request in order to find all the groups for a given user. And with this extensible matching rule, the global catalog would return all the groups that are obtained through either direct or indirect membership. So in the previous slide, I explained the big differences and the things that are really specific to Active Directory server. And we need to mimic Active Directory server if we want to implement our own global catalog. So in order to do that, we relied on three main components. So the first one is the schema converter. It's taking as input the Active Directory schema. Then it maps the specific syntaxes to the standard syntaxes. It's also able to map the matching or ordering rules. It's able to handle the conflicts that we saw in the previous slide. And the output is a schema that is compatible with our LDAP server instance that is relying on 389DS. So the global catalog is the main component is implemented as a separate 389DS instance. We needed a separate instance because the global catalog must listen on specific ports that are different from the standard LDAP and LDAP-S port. The separate instance also allows us to have the global catalog schema. And we will need to define specific indexes that are targeted at the search filters used inside the global catalog. And the big difference is also that the authentication to this separate DS instance is done through SASL authentication, but any SASL user will be mapped to a read-only user. So this instance is read-only except for the directory manager. Then the last part of our global catalog implementation is a synchronization daemon. So this daemon is based on sync REPL that is following a published RFC. Its goal is to monitor the primary LDAP instance, and it's listening for changes on entries, for addition, deletion of entries. And for all the entries that are modified or inserted in our primary LDAP instance, it will apply the transformation, create the required attributes, rename the entry to reflect the tree hierarchy, and then update the entry in the global catalog. So in this next part, I will have a quick demo of the global catalog. So on my left screen, I have a window that is opened on my IPA server. And on the right side, I have a window opened on a member of my Active Directory domain. So there is a two-way trust established between my free IPA topology and my Active Directory domain. And during the demo, I will create a user on free IPA side and then show you that I am able to use this user to connect on my Windows machine and also apply permissions for this IPA user. So first of all, I need to get credentials as admin in order to create my user. So this is obtained with a Kerberos ticket. Then I will use the user add command in order to create my free IPA user. Okay, and now I will create a group and add this user to my group. Okay, so now I have one group, one user member of that group. I will reset my user password with kinit. Okay. So now on my Windows machine, I need to perform a few steps in order to be able to connect to my Windows machine, because I will use hard desktop. So if I have a quick look at the list of remote desktop users, I can see that currently no one is allowed to use hard desktop to connect to my machine. So I will add my IDM user. So he is part of the domain IPA test and his name IDM user. And I will add him to my group of remote desktop users. Okay. So now I can also try to use the run as command in order to show that my IDM user can be resolved from the Windows side. So what I'm doing is using the run as command as IDM user and I'm launching a who am I command. It's defect demo effect. Oh yes, so I forgot something. Okay. So on the screen, you can see the output of my who am I command. So you can see that I'm IDM user, so this was recognized. The command also resolved my SID. And you can also see the list of groups for which IDM user is a member. And one interesting thing to notice is that we were also able to resolve my IDM group. Okay. So that's a good start. And I will also show you later that I'm able to use this user to access documents that are protected by the Windows permissions. So I have two documents, one that I want to share. So into the security tab. So remember, in this window, I am connected as administrator and I want to share my document with the IDM user. So what I'm going to do is to add my IDM user. So I need to change the location in order to look for my user in the IPA domain. And then I will try to find my user with check names. And you can see that the name is properly resolved to IDM user. Okay, so I want to add my user and I want to allow this user write access to the document. Okay. So now I need to open a second R desktop window, but this time it will be with my IDM user credentials. Okay, so I specify my domain and my username, then my password. And you can see that I was able to connect. So now let's go and see if I am able to access the document shared with me. So I will use Notepad to open the document. So I will specify the path directly. So it's a document shared by administrator on his documents folder, and the name of the document was shared doc. And you can see that I am able to open the document. Now let's try to write on the document. Oops. And it's saved. So during this demo, I showed that I was able to connect to the Windows member machine as my IDM user, and that I'm also able to use the permissions with my IDM user. So now let's go back to the presentation, and Alexander will explain you what happens behind the scenes.
Yes, thank you. I hope I'm unmuted.
Yeah, I can hear you well.
Yes. So behind the scenes, what happened is that the Windows UI in the client side, it needed to look up an object in the global catalog, then translate that object name to seed, because in the access control list, it uses seeds to store the references, who is allowed and who is not allowed. And then to log in into the system, we needed to first authenticate and then authorize this login. And there's a lot of use of Kerberos on it, and specifically the extensions that Microsoft created over Kerberos to support these use cases. So let's go into those details. So in this security tab, when Flo pressed edit and tried to add a search to user, what happened is that we asked the UI to actually go and look up the global catalog. So if we look at the next slide, then it's actually going and searching in the global catalog by the name that we see there. It's not enough to simply provide a LDAP server to search to. So there are some expectations from the Windows clients. In particular, the client that implements the security tab, it doesn't need all of these additional kind of things that we're talking about, like this object category and object seed and the matching rules. It just does the search that whatever you enter it as a name matches some entry in the LDAP database. But other clients that actually rely on the global catalog from commercial applications written with the Active Directory in mind, they do rely on these facts and some parts of other components. They in Windows, they do rely on the fact that you can specify object category for the object you're searching as a string rather than the DN to the schema definition. And if we come back, these parts, they are allowing us to simply return a result from LDAP. That's easy thing, but it required us to do a lot of behind it. So after that happened, actually, before that happened, the connection to the global catalog LDAP server needed to be authenticated and authorized by the global catalog. As we say, the connections they use SASL, JSS Spinigo, JSS JSS API, and they all map it to read-only access. So there is only access through the with the help of the Kerberos ticket have been available, and to get that Kerberos ticket from Windows side towards IPA, you don't need any kind of things. You just need a forest trust in one direction. But because we are then looking back and using these details on Windows system, we need two-way trust. So then after all this work back and forth to get the tickets for the user, Windows client will try to talk to its own domain controller to get the name, which was found in the global catalog, resolved to seed. And this is where it becomes interesting, because in ability to talk to another domain controller, Well, for Windows, this is kind of easy. You just issue call to your own domain controller. That one reroutes the request on your behalf to the domain controller of the domain that contains this user. And it's known as a trusted one. But on Samba side, Samba runs the incoming connections after authentication as some POSIX user that is related to this identity. So we need to have whoever connects to us needs to have POSIX identity. So POSIX attributes associated also with the machine's account and so on. So the requested name that happened to be passed there also must make some sense to Samba, which is an interesting thing to look at. And if you move forward and to the next slide, now we can see that because the Windows UI choose when we were choosing the location of the user, when it was choosing it, the forest corresponding to a free IPA domain is shown with the fully qualified name rather than just the NetBIOS name. So the request that comes over the network in LSA lookup names call will have a username or group name qualified with the domain rather than NetBIOS name. And in Samba, we do not expect that. So we expect to have the global SAM name, which is NetBIOS name of our domain. So we, without this fix, we wouldn't even get to the point of looking into a PassDB database that IPA provides inside Samba. So if we go first, then after we got all these seeds resolved, they stored in ACL, and then we try to log in, and we can use some name that represents our user. So what Windows Logon does, it uses so-called enterprise principal name type. So whatever you type it in the name field will be used to see if it's belonging to one of the domains it knows, and about trusted domains it knows about the Kerberos realm name and the NetBIOS name of that domain. So you can use those both to specify either in the this way, like on the screen with at sign, or with slash, like in the demo. So Windows Workstation will try to authenticate against own DC. That DC will issue a cross-realm referral to IPA, and then IPA gets the actual AS request to get the ticket granting ticket from the Windows system. And then that system will ask for service ticket for actually cross-realm TGT to talk back to itself. Windows Workstation then asks own DC to look up username using this service ticket to itself. And this ends up going into IPA back and forth several times. So Samba will see this lookup names three call, like on the previous slide. If you look at the previous slide, you will see that this is lookup names three call, and it uses the level of up-level trusts only too. So this is basically a lookup in the forest. The up-level is the Active Directory, or so in the forest trusts. So in the result of all these operations, and these are done like several times because there is no caching, it looks like, and different layers on Windows stack do this resolution multiple times. So you get requests for lookup names, and then lookup seeds, and then again lookup names and lookup seeds in the span of 1 second or so. So if we go forward, we eventually get logged in, and the group membership and all this information will be taken out of the MS pack record in the ticket. So next slide. And yeah, so the pack record, it has to be in the corporate tickets for the users or identities that try to authenticate and use these interactive services at least. And FreeIPA issues those tickets with pack for users and selected corporate services for quite some time, but it didn't work, as we found recently, for protocol transition over trusted link, because IPA wasn't actually doing the right thing in solving this. And one of the bigger work for the last maybe a month or so was to fix this. So we finally fixed it. And as you can see on the screenshot, all these details are now available. So whatever you see here from the Windows view for the Who Am I request is basically a dump of the security token associated with the logon, which is taken from the PAC record and constructed with the PAC record. Not every single kind of group information that is available there is available in the PAC. Many of those are automatically added to the security descriptor of the logged user by the system itself. So for example, you can see these aliases to built-in, like built-in administrators, built-in users, and so on. And you can see that this is a remote interactive logon NT authority. This is an alias that is added because this is user that belongs to a group that is allowed to do remote logon. So it possesses this seed in the token, in its token upon the logon. But we also can see the IPA IDM group also in this list, and all the others will be there. And one important element here is below the IPA IDM group is the information that the ticket, the credentials of user were validated by the KDC. So it's authentication authority asserted identity of this user. And therefore there is this S1181 seed. If this would have been protocol transition, so as for you to self operation, this would have been a different seed. And on the Windows side, you could actually differentiate in the access controls that whoever connects to you should be the real user, not some service that impersonates this user by allowing or disallowing access using this seed. So this what we get with the changes we made, and there were some funny parts of this, because you can actually have a pack that is not really fully compatible or compliant to what you see in the packs in the tickets issued by Active Directory domain controllers, and it still would work. So for example, the logon time in IPA was in the pack structure was set to 0. So basically saying that this user logged on 50 years ago, the last time. And that was okay for Windows, except that it was treating these zeros as this the password for the user has to be reset and change it. So it was presenting a dialogue showing that, hey, you have to change the password. And if you press that, you will change the password and it works, but the next login, it tries again to request you to change the password. So basically it's kind of some sort of a loop, not a loophole, but it's some sort of a combination of bugs in IPA and Windows that forced you to do this kind of thing. So once we fixed it, this request for changing password disappeared. The other thing was that the group membership in Info3 structure has to include the primary group aside from the fact that primary group has a separate field in the info tree. So unless you add this primary group in, which we didn't do when we read MSPAC spec like 5 years ago originally, some services wouldn't allow you to log into them. So for example, Microsoft SQL Server denies your IPA users because of that. So once we fixed this, suddenly these IPA users started to be usable and usable in SQL Server environment as well. So it's kind of parallel thing, but suddenly it happens this way. And if we move forward, this shows, this example actually shows that Windows applications, they rely a lot on the services for for users extensions. So there's workstation to workstation requests where protocol transition happens a lot, and user to user request terminal, remote terminal access from one machine in the domain to another. So for the R desktop access from Linux machine to Windows, this doesn't really need it. But if you try to get from one Windows machine to another Windows machine using an IPA user, that will be needed. And there are some interesting bugs there that we need to fix. So this is the one thing working. The another thing that we have support for is the S4U2 proxy delegation. It's supported in IPA from the beginning, but there are three different types of this kind of delegation of the TGT in Kerberos with S4U extensions. And one of them, the latest one, this constraint delegation was really, really added to MIT Kerberos in 1.18 just last year by Isaac Bukris. We have support for it in IPA, but no management of it. So the client can request these things, but the server has no structures that would allow to judge those requests and grant them or not allow. So we fix it as for you to self. Just before this talk, I pushed these changes into IPA and seems to broke some synchronization, the code in the master, but it's not on on the mirrors yet. And there are still things failing, like user to user. It's still failing with aliases in the second ticket. That's the remote terminal access. The interesting part is that the same thing applies to Samba AD with MIT Kerberos. So if we fix this in MIT Kerberos, we fix this for IPA and also for Samba AD. And there is no support for claims, which wasn't really coming up for quite some years. Maybe some of the complex interactions with Azure and Active Directory might get this in. So next slide. So altogether, we actually almost there. There are two big missing pieces on the Samba side. So actually, the group lookup is missing in IPA implementation of PassDB module. And we need to add this, and we need to fix the lookup, like I said, with the forest name, but the fix is there. In order to get this into upstream, I need to write tests, and in order to write tests for that, I need to add stuff like the group lookup and other things to existing PassDB modules like TDBSM. So it's kind of a snowfall that I'm trying to implement right now. The other part is that on the LDAP server side, we still need to implement matching rules. They are not all of them are implemented. So out of four matching rules, we have two, and two more need to be implemented. And there is already ongoing draft to have principal aliases lookups supported in MIT Kerberos in a way that would allow to user-to-user stuff working. And it's, as I said, needed for Samba ADBC as well. So this is the all thing, but it opens us to than to actually have IPA to IPA trust based on the same infrastructure. And if we learn teach SSSD to use this global catalog and IPA case, we can expand beyond just talking to Active Directory. So that's all I have. And let's look.
Yeah, we are out of time almost.
Yes, there is one request from Andrew. One question. This feels like a lot of work to avoid using Samba ADDC as an LDAP server. Was it worth it? The use case for FreeIPA is predominantly working with LDAP with Linux systems, and specifically, at that point when it started, there wasn't really a performant LDAP server in Samba AD. So we are dealing with heritage on both sides, and I think it's just that different implementation also exposes different bugs in commonly used components, which is good. We're improving both sides. So I think it's worth it.
Okay, thank you very much. That's all the time we have for today.
Yes, thank you.